ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Her optimism has been enjoyed by the internet this week. Can I read you?
Her optimism has been enjoyed by the internet this week. What a take.
Yeah.
Bang. 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 Bang on. Yee-haw.
Oh, wow. Someone's gone a little bit country.
I'm whatever I want to be, just like Beyonce, Miff.
That's exactly right. You can be whoever you want to be, as long as you're insanely talented.
How
and
are
you? And bonkers rich. Do whatever you want.
We are going to get to Cowboy Carter very, very soon, but how are you? How's your week been?
I am good. I've had a lovely little break over the Easter period. Didn't do much, which was actually quite delightful. Felt like I caught up on life. I'm a bit more of a human being again, which is good. What about you?
I went to your spiritual home of the Gold Coast over the long weekend.
Oh, yes, of course. And I'm sorry we didn't match up, given I'm only an hour away in Brisbane. But, it's the social life's busy when you've got friends coming to stay from other cities as well.
It's all good. I was in my nap game as well. I went into this long weekend thinking I just need to rest. It's been a really full-on start to the year. I think a lot of people are feeling that, really needed that long weekend, because it's just been sort of all systems go from the start of the year. And I was like, all I want to do is nap, read, eat hot cross buns, and swim in the ocean. And that's all I did. The nap game was strong. I've never napped so much. It was the best.
That's good. You obviously needed it. And your body tells you what you need a lot of the time. Most of the time we don't listen. But when you do get a break, I think that's really important to follow through.
Can I just
highly endorse a nap.
Thank you. I feel like I'm in my nap era. Can I also just, the totally opposite of naps, I just want to shout out the amount of six packs I saw. Bloody hell, the Gold Coast, there are some fit people, and I understand, having lived in Sydney for 14 years, when the weather's good, the kit is, well, off, and so maybe people are a little bit more kind of self-conscious about their fitness, how they look, all that sort of stuff. But good Lord, I haven't seen that many six-packs. Like, we were doing six-pack counts, me and my mates.
I know you've seen mine, and it's great, but yeah. Six packs everywhere. See, this is why I don't swim at the beach.
Oh, but I don't care anymore.
Oh,
like,
you're good.
Everyone's got their waxed fit bodies, and I'm there in my full sun suit, completely covered.
Yeah,
the whitest skin you'll ever see. Haven't seen sun in weeks. I don't care. I absolutely
That's
don't
good.
Care.
That's
I'm
the
in
way
the
you
I'm in a CBF era, Miff. I don't care.
Yeah. Oh, look, it just gets worse from here. The CBF levels go lower and lower and lower. But I still sometimes look, because in my mind I look like those people with six packs and, fabulous tans. It's just really depressing when you see the reflection in the mirror. You're like, oh, I thought I looked really, good today.
No!
I just want to do a shout out to everybody for watching that little Bang On Bendigo video, because my haircut wasn't appreciated at the time. I don't think enough people clocked eyes on it. My comments have never gone off more in my life. Once, as soon as Bang On was out, you all came through. It was amazing. I'm just getting all these love the lob. I mean, I didn't do it for that, but it was pretty funny when I kept getting all these notifications going, what's going on? I'm blowing up.
I love it. You got a bit thirsty and the Bang fam responded in kind.
Came through. Oh, when you get a haircut like this, it needs to be acknowledged. And it just,
it's a hot haircut.
I didn't feel like I was getting the acknowledgement.
I think the lighting in which we did that video, and let's be honest, our social media through this Bang On Live tour has a little bit to be decided. We're learning a lot, let's just say that. But the lighting, you couldn't actually see your haircut that clearly. I liked the video you posted yesterday where you've gone with the side part, Miff, with your new
side
bob.
Side part now, yeah.
Hot.
Gone side, well, side part's apparently back in as well. But I realised when I was filming, I couldn't stop touching it because I was looking at my hair while I was doing it.
Is it me in there?
Yeah, it just feels really good. I highly recommend, if anyone's been thinking about getting rid of a whole lot of dead weight, highly recommend.
Beautiful. You can check out that video now on Miff's social media. Do leave some comments.
You don't have to comment anymore.
Like,
it's okay.
And subscribe.
I've got it.
You're feeling it. Speaking of things that have been getting a lot of comments this week.
Oh. He's shaking.
Oh, yeah, she's finally released it on Friday, which was very kind over a long weekend to give us the chance to spend 4 days imbibing.
You needed it. Because it goes for how long?
78 minutes.
That's a long time.
Cowboy Carter is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Did you listen to it over the weekend?
Of course I did. I've given it a couple of listens. I don't think I know it as intimately as you do because you've had to do a whole lot of reporting on it and you've done an incredible job too. I actually looked at your television spot on ABC Breakfast, News Breakfast, to get a bit of a background for myself. So thank you. You're doing the work for me for the work that we're doing on Bang On together. So thank you.
Real Ouroboros going on here.
It's very meta.
I'm making the shortcut for our shortcut to go to the Bang Fam. This is why we're here.
I thought it was great. I thought you were really, it was really succinct and it really communicated so many great ideas about the album.
Oh, thank you, Miff.
Yeah.
Thank you for reviewing my review.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, I was sitting in it a lot over the weekend and I think also just over Tuesday when I got back on the clock, I really just sat in it and on loop was listening to it. And the thing that I love about this record is that it is such an album. Like there's not one point whenever I've been putting it on and I've been playing it a lot that I want to skip any songs or that I want to stop listening to it. I want to hear that full cycle because that's what it feels like, particularly with that first and last song. It feels like they're the beautiful bookends with American Requiem and then finishing with Amen. And they have this gorgeous sort of sense of closure, but also a circular notion to it too, because you want to go back and unpick and unravel all those other Easter eggs. And there are so many Easter eggs in this. And I will say, because I've been enjoying the comments, it's, you know, sadly, I will say, little side bang, it is very telling that a lot of comments on Facebook comment sections have been switched off because we know why, because people are going to say awful things and some people are going to say racist things. And I think that freaking sucks in 2024. But by Beyoncé's own admission, in one of the most rule-driven genres in the world, country music has got a lot of rules and it always has. Mm. She said from the outset, this ain't a country album, it's a Beyoncé album. And that's what she's explored on this. She's bent the idea of the genre to her, not the other way around. And there's so many different sounds on it, you know? She raps on it, which is incredible.
Yeah. It's not really a country album, is it, really? There's country moments, but it doesn't feel to me like a country album at all, despite the imagery that is selling it.
It's a Beyoncé record.
Yeah.
There's some gorgeous twang on it. You know what I love about this album? I love how amazing her voice sounds, and she's got one of the best voices in the game, but also just how much it's stretched. And in some cases, totally stripped back. Like there's a lot of multi-tracking of her voice on some songs, but then other songs it's just really quite raw and bare bones and you just get to live in that voice with just a guitar, just some simple sort of banjo. Yeah. It's really amazing to hear that front and center.
And the production is beautiful on this record, and that, I think that's something because quite often Beyoncé's stuff is so incredibly dense because it's so highly produced. It's really nice to hear things stripped back. And it's really tender in moments, which I think surprised me as well. And I love that.
There's the album's not like all killer, no filler, I will say that. Even though there's part of it that's like, I don't want to skip any songs. There are some moments where I'm like,
it is a bit long, let's be honest. I mean, we're allowed to say that. We are allowed to say that.
Can I say something that could be controversial? I don't like the Jolene cover.
I don't like it either.
I love the Blackbird cover, but I don't. And the Jolene cover it's kind of a reinterpretation too, because she's changed a bunch of the lyrics.
She's changed a couple of the words. And if those people who don't know, she's changed the song into a warning, don't come for my man, as opposed to please don't take my man. And the original Jolene, written by Dolly Parton, was about a sort of a woman, maybe Dolly, maybe not, I don't know, who felt quite inferior to this beautiful woman with auburn hair who was just this glamazon that her partner was clearly obsessed with. And I guess the feeling of the song is flipped with this one because she's basically saying that there's a million like you to this Jolene, and with reference to Becky with the good hair, which we heard on Lemonade as announced by Dolly Parton as the person in this story. And she's basically saying there's a million like you, you're not special. Get away from my man. I've done all this work. Don't even bother. You can't compete. So she's actually put herself in a superior position to the original Jolene. And I'm not sure it kind of works because I just feel like this narrative with Beyoncé has been done.
Yeah.
You know, stay away from my man. It's like, I mean, Azalea Banks, as cooked as she is, wrote a couple of thoughts about the record. And, you know, all opinions are valid, some more so than others. But this I thought was pretty funny. She said, plus, who is this imaginary adversary Sis thinks still wants to hump on Jay in 2024? She's got to find new content. Nobody, and I mean nobody, thinks he's even remotely attractive. Lol. Oh, my God. It's kind of true, though. It's like no one's coming for your man now. Like, I just... It's, yeah, I don't know, that felt like a tiny misstep, even though it's been endorsed by Dolly. But I think she sings beautifully on it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure it needed that reworking. I think it was more powerful when the main character is more vulnerable.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. Like, I think it's really hard to cover Jolene from day dot. Like, it's been covered so many times. And I think it's really hard to cover it. Nothing comes close. But I think that shifting the lyrics didn't quite work for me. Also, there was one particular line in it that really gave me the ick. We've been deep in love for 20 years. I raised that man. I raised his kids. And I think that the whole thing with, in general, this whole conversation around women coming for your man is that in that situation, it happens time and time again. The men are presented with no agency, and that just sort of solidifies it for me. I raised that man. I raised his kids. Well, it's like, well, he's an adult. He's an adult.
Yeah.
He's got his own decision-making skills here. And much like, you know, on Lemonade, he's not some scared little deer who's being taken advantage of. So I don't know. That just gives me the ick. I just heard that line and I was like, oh, I don't like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Look, there have been supporters of this song, and there are quite a few. The Atlantic ran something that said that she's not playing into some trad wife cultural resurgence or presuming herself superior over other women, but is instead echoing the right of the black family to defend itself, especially within the context of the album as a subversion of the double standard of violence in music, where the predominantly white field of country music will rally behind themes of dominance and violence, but those same themes in the predominantly black field of hip-hop artists gets vilified as dangerous and even prosecuted. So, look, there's so many angles on this, so many angles and interpretations. But, yeah, I'm just, yeah, not 100% on that one, sadly.
But isn't that very fact of the fact that we're all talking about it? And I kind of talked about this in the review I did for ABC News as well with a bunch of other incredible female music journos and music directors. We all got in and had a big chat, big chin wag about this record. The very nature of her ubiquity means that we are all talking about it, and she can change this. And whether you like it or not, she's dominated the conversation in music over the last week. And what a huge power that is. And it's not a flawless record, but it is a bloody great listen. And there's some songs on it, like I said, that I was kind of like, oh, this is a bit cheesy. But then after listening to it about six times, I'm obsessed. And I speak specifically of this very lush, beautiful, completely easy listening song called Bodyguard.
It's I love it.
The top's down, the wind is through my hair.
Yeah.
It's like one step away from yacht rock, and I'm here for it.
Oh, it's so good.
So good.
There's some real gems on this, and beautiful collaborations with American black country artists in the hope, and I'm sure it will happen, that they are elevated as well. But then there's also, you know, beautiful cheesy moments like this. And I've got to say my favourite would be the one she does with Willie Jones, Just for Fun, because it's got those soaring 1970s country strings and that Carole Kaye country bass line that became so famous, you know, on songs like Wichita Lineman, Glen Campbell's version. She was an amazing bassist, and they've really utilised those sounds. It's those moments on this record that I love, because that's where my love of country lies, and she's referenced that too. So, yeah. There's some great moments on this record.
Lots of layers, lots of conversation, best thing of all, really great album to listen to. And I was saying a couple of days ago, release the credits, I want to see, because there's so many little Easter eggs in here that I'm not sure where they come from. People like Arlo Parks has been named as a songwriter on Ya Ya. There's a bunch of other people who are involved, like Stevie Wonder just casually turning up and playing the harmonica on Blackbird. But she has released the credits now, and as I was wandering into the studio today to come in for Bang On, I heard my colleague Al Newstead say that he is in the middle of writing a massive kind of CSI Mission Impossible style connection of all the credits, and I think he's doing that for Double J and ABC News. So if he's done that by the time we get out of here, I'll chuck that in the show notes. But if you, like me, want to dive even deeper into this record, that will be available to you very soon on some ABC platform, which is very, very exciting. Hey, the other thing that happened this week, which was fucking weird. It ain't my fault that I'm out here getting loose. Gotta blame it on the goose. Gotta blame it on my juice, baby. Lizzo said she was quitting music, didn't she, Miff?
She did. There was a statement on Instagram that basically said, I'm getting tired of putting up with being dragged by everyone in my life and on the internet. All I want is to make music and make people happy and help the world be a little better than how I found it. But I'm starting to feel like the world doesn't want me in it. I'm constantly up against lies, being told about me for clout and views, being the butt of the joke every single time because of how I look, my character being picked apart by people who don't know me and disrespecting my name. I didn't sign up for this shit. I quit. That's a pretty strong statement. And from that, we all heard what she was saying, that she's quitting. But it turns out that she's not actually quitting. she's changed her mind. She said that when I say quit, I mean I quit giving any negative energy attention. So what I'm not going to quit is the joy of my life, which is making music, which is connecting to people. So I don't know what the whole point of it was. I mean, Lizzo has certainly been in the media in the last year or so. There have been quite a few court cases. She's battling a lawsuit that's been filed by three of her former dancers for sexual harassment, racial discrimination, and fostering a hostile work environment. So she's been through a lot, and these cases are yet to be determined. But she's also, and we cannot deny, has been relentlessly fat-shamed on social media since the beginning of time. And that would take a toll on somebody for sure.
Yeah, I think that when I saw that, and when I saw it, I thought, there's no way she's quitting, because, of course, I went back into her timeline and thought, okay, she's talked a few days ago about how, you know, this is one of the proudest songs she's ever written. She's got something that she's coming out. She's obviously got a lot of skin in the game in terms of her workout gear and her swimwear line, and she's got a whole sort of side hustle happening there, which is becoming, you know, a larger part of her whole business model as well. And I just was like, oh, surely she's not quitting. I saw this as a, when you're feeling like shit, which all of us feel, and social media is a big part of what makes us feel that, stay away from the phone. Don't post anything. Yeah. Like, it's just, you know, and I don't want to be cynical and go, this was
a publicity.
Yeah, like, it's not a good way to get people on side, I think. It just, but I don't know. Who knows why she did it? And it's just weird. Anyway, she's not quitting, so that's good news, I guess, if you're a Lizzo fan. She's not quitting. It's very, very strange.
Yeah, I mean, but look, I bow down to her in so many ways for putting up, well, not putting up with, but having to keep on going through the relentless criticism that has often been targeted towards her for the wrong reasons, because she has body positivity and refuses to quieten herself or silence herself, regardless of the criticism. So it must be tough. It must be tough, but maybe if you're publicising a new swimwear line and a record, it's probably not the time to quit, because it could be read as a publicity stunt.
Yeah. Interesting. Strange. Billie Eilish has also got a bit of backlash this week too. Did you see what was going on with her? It was a strange kind of conversation too, because what she was saying seemed to be coming from a very decent and real place when she talked to Billboard about just kind of being pissed off about certain artists who are putting out multiple versions of their record as collectors on vinyl. And when I say multiple, I'm talking about like the Rolling Stones releasing 43 variants. 43 variants of their record from last year, Hackney Diamonds, which is totally a pitch to people who are super fans, who are collectors.
Oh, it's all the blokes who've followed the Rolling Stones and have collected every single bit.
Gotta
of
have
what
them all.
Released. Gotta have it all. Gotta have it all. Gotta have it in the record collection.
I think people thought she was talking about Taylor Swift, who does a lot of that too, which is, you know, fair if they are. But again, that thing of pitting young female pop star against the other, and she did come out and clarify and say, I wasn't speaking about any one artist. And I think that the thing with this is that what she says is totally true. You know, this is unsustainable. I think some music fans are kind of like, you're barking up the wrong tree. Vinyl is not the problem. It's not a single-use plastic. But I'm kind of like, this fits very much for me in the you can walk and chew gum at the same time field of thinking, which is, you know what? You can love records, but you can also say that plastics are bad and that maybe producing 43 versions of the same record may not be the most sustainable outcome for you. Mm. And I think a lot of musicians are continually thinking about how they
the
can
number
be
ones.
Number ones, but also how they can be sustainable, you know.
Yeah.
Some musicians it's easier than others because they've got a lot of success and a lot of wealth. You know, Coldplay make a big deal about how they want to become carbon neutral on their tours. Billie Eilish has got skin in the game. She's done this for years, always running her career sustainably, doing all kinds of really interesting stuff. I sort of thought, why are you, like, it's fair for her to say this, and it's just one of those, again, easy clickbait things to pull out and attack someone for saying something against vinyl. But I reckon it's fair. When I read that thing about the Stones, I was like, 43, you're having a laugh.
Taking the piss. Oh, my God. Just I saw something on the weekend. It was on Mick Jagger's socials, and I think it was just on his stories or whatever you call it, on his reels. And it was him just going out one night out at a restaurant or a bar, and there was a local covers band doing moves like Jagger, and he was in the audience. It was like in some tiny pub, and I'm like, wouldn't that be the most freaking hilarious / terrifying thing of your life? Mick Jagger doing his scary moves like Jagger while you're playing. Like, and the singer was not like Jagger at all. Like, you know, he was just sort of, you know, midlife, balding, just not that kind of guy. And Mick was sort of just laughing and dancing, and like, he totally would have terrified whoever was in the band. It was beautiful. It was a moment.
His body's liquid though, isn't he? He doesn't look like an 80-year-old man. How does he do it? How does he do it, Mick?
I think it's growth hormones, but whatever.
Which leads seamlessly into an amazing piece that you sent to me, which I will say I have read three times.
I can't get enough of this article. I just can't. And speaking of, like, we were good in our 20s, but we were doing nothing and no one cared about who we were or our thoughts. And that's probably best for all of us. Grazie Sophia Christie, who's a writer living in Miami and London, has written an article for The Cut, and I think she's 27. And look, I don't want to pick on her too much, but she's 27 and she wrote, "The case for marrying an older man. A woman's life is all work and little rest. An age gap relationship can help." And she's written an article about her experience of marrying in her very early 20s, or I think she was even 20 when she met him, an older man, by which she says he's only 10 years older. I know that that's an age gap at that time, but she talks about it as looking around and seeing all the boys of her gen and looking at how difficult life could be if she chose one of those boys, because they hadn't actually kind of developed a sense of self necessarily. These are her, I'm implying her words. And so she thought, I'll just look up and have an easier life and marry a bloke 10 years older because he's already got some money, he's got a career, and it's probably the best idea for me. But sadly, it's written in such a way that's just opened the door for her to be, well, I don't know if criticised is the word, enjoyed. Her optimism has been enjoyed by the internet this week. Can I read you?
Her optimism has been enjoyed by the internet this week. What a take.
Yeah. Can I read you the opening paragraph?
Please.
"When I was 20 and a junior at Harvard College, a series of great ironies began to mock me. I could study all I wanted, prove myself as exceptional as I liked. And still, my fiercest advantage remained so universal it deflated my other plans. My youth, the newness of my face and body, compellingly effortless, cruelly fleeting. I shared it with the average idle young woman shrugging down the street. The thought, when it descended on me, jolted my perspective, the way a falling leaf can make you look up. I could diligently craft an ideal existence over years and years of sleepless nights in industry, or I could just marry it early. So naturally, I began to lug a heavy suitcase of books each Saturday to the Harvard Business School to work on my Nabokov paper. In one cavernous, well-appointed room sat approximately 50 of the planet's most suitable bachelors. I had high breasts, most of my eggs, plausible deniability when it came to purity, a flash ponytail, a pep in my step that had yet to run out. Apologies to progress, but older men still desired those things." I mean, I think she feels like, I feel like she's talking about a man in his 50s at this point.
At this point, I'm scrolling down and going, is this satire? What's happening? This is why I had to read it three times. Because I'm still confused.
I know.
It's so cooked. And I mean, there's so many things to unpack about this because she talks about it as a form of feminism. And sure, you do you. But this, it's so cynical and so transactional. She even speaks about relationships being transactions.
This sort of contracts.
Contracts, this idea that across the ages that women have always taken care of. Same as that Beyoncé lyric, raised men only for them to go on and marry someone else, that they've trained them because they're useless little orbs without us. Mm. And there's no agency in this piece for either part, for the husband or for her. It is so cynical, and she's kind of whipping it up as this great romance and this great feminist clever idea that she's found the loophole. But what she does is it's nothing about the friggin' age gap. It's about marrying a rich guy who's a few years older than her. There's nothing to do with the age gap. It's just so thinly veiled, and that becomes really apparent really, really quickly.
I love this paragraph. Most offended were the single older women, my husband's classmates. They discussed me in the bathroom at parties when I was in the stall. What does he see in her? What do they talk about? They were concerned about me. They wielded their concern like a bludgeon. And it's kind of, I, when I was reading that, I'm like thinking, they don't care, love. They don't want him. Because the problem is here, when you're in your 20s, you think if you've got a boyfriend, like, you're so not fully formed at this point. You kind of, you know, love is magical at this point.
Yeah.
People are perfect at this point. It's only when you get older that you sort of, a lot of that drops away. And I don't mean to sound cynical, but it's harder and harder to love like that when you're a lot older. And you also probably think that everyone's into your boyfriend. They're not. They're not at all. There's a lot of confusion in this, and it's funny, but it's also like, oh God, I just want to take her aside and go, just hold this one off until you're 35.
Oh yeah. She submitted this and the editors of the cut have gone, ooh.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a responsibility there because they know that it's going to go viral, which it has. But I don't know whether she's aware of why this is such a messed up article and such a grab bag of different ideas that have been funneled into a highly personal and highly individual experience that she's trying to use as this blueprint for how we should all live. I think as well that kind of the way that she dismisses same age, same stage. And I've got, like, I don't know about you, Miff, I think you're probably the same. I've dated people who are significantly older and significantly younger than me.
Yeah.
And there've been different experiences, and there's been parts of it that have been like hard and parts of it that have been great. But I think that, like, the closer I got with my two last partners, including my current, is that we're about 3 years apart. And there's something that's wonderful about growing together. And I'm not saying that's for everyone, but the way that she dismisses this as something where it's like you're both figuring it out and it's hard and awful and you should just get someone else to quote unquote take care of everything, I really balked at. Like, there's a point in this article where she says, I'll never forget it, how he showed me around our first place like he was introducing me to myself. This is the wine you'll drink, where you'll keep your clothes. We vacation here. This is the other language we'll speak.
This
you'll
is coercive
learn it.
Control.
I did it. It's fucked. Adulthood seemed like a series of exhausting obligations, but his logistics ran so smoothly that he simply tacked mine on. I moved into his flat, onto his level, drag and drop, cleaner thrice a week, bills automatic. By opting out of partnership in my 20s, I granted myself a kind of compartmentalized, liberating selfishness none of my friends have managed. You've given yourself up for a dude, mate. Like, what the fuck? You've completely lost yourself in someone else's life. How depressing.
I know. And no amount of holidays and nice wine and nice dinners is going to make up for that when you start to get bored of it.
There are some great comments, of course, at last count, around 550.
I just
want to read a few of them. Top comment, this is the case for marrying a rich guy, not an old guy. Fact. Someone else says, this is a deeply silly essay, but I got a comment on this statement. Quote, I dream of new structures, a world in which women have entry-level jobs in their 30s, alternate avenues for promotion, corporate ladders with balconies on which they can stand still, have a smoke, take a break, make a baby, enjoy themselves before they keep climbing. End quote. And then the commenter goes on, ha ha ha, while you were dreaming of it in your leisurely marriage to a wealthy, not old man, my female colleagues and I are making it happen. You're welcome. Tonight we'll meet up for happy hour, drinking wine we learned about on trips we happily planned and paid for ourselves, giggling over those girls we saw hanging out around our business school library who imagined that the single men we went to school with were prizes worthy of trading our wonderful, formative, adventurous 20s for. Cheers. P.S. Your husbands are trying to have affairs with us. But that's true, isn't it? It's all the things you say, the mess of your 20s. Like, even though it is a roller coaster and can be horrific and brilliant and all the things at once, why would you ever want to miss that and just subsume into someone else's quote-unquote sorted out life? Yeah. Just, again, the agency is all gone here.
Yeah, that, and that is the problem, isn't it? It's that's the deep problem with this article, agency on both sides.
Yeah, it's a great piece.
It is, like, read it. You'll be infuriated, but you'll also go, oh, and you, but you'll think about it for a long time afterwards.
You'll need to read it several times just to understand what the fuck is going on, and I will put it in the show notes. Hey, Miff, we are going to be heading towards some more Big Bang On Live shows. Heads up, we've been inviting you to be part of our shows if you're up for watching or reading or enjoying something that we're going to chat about. And because we're good classmates, we like to set our homework early. We're going to Canberra next Friday, the 12th of April.
Friday night in Canberra. That's dangerous. Are you coming out, Canberra? Because we want to see you. It's Friday night, end of the working week. And we know that Canberrans love to celebrate the end of the working week. So we'd love to see you first.
Yes, cobbies, as we call them, closer business drinks. Bang On Live, we're going to be there for you on Friday night. And we're also going to Melbourne. We're playing the big room, the main room of the Melbourne Town Hall. Tickets for that are very close to selling out. And I just want to give you a heads up. This is something that Kirsty Wiebeck has been posting about on her social media, great comedian. You know how you look at, like, seating charts and you go, oh, that seats are at the back of the room, whatever. With Comedy Festival, a lot of shows, even though there's a seating chart and it's giving you a ticket in, like, row M of the upper bit, it's whoever turns up first. So if you...
Is it?
Yeah. So the main town hall of the Melbourne Town Hall, just for this show, for the Melbourne show, is first in, best dressed. So if you haven't got your tickets yet and you're like, I don't want to be at the back of the room, that's my hot tip for you. All you got to do is turn up a little bit earlier and you can sit wherever the frig you want.
But even the back of the room at the Melbourne Town Hall is great. And I've got to say, this is a moment for us, Anne. Like, this is hometown stuff. It's a big deal. Main Hall, Melbourne Town Hall, come along.
I can't believe it.
We're going to cry.
I got emotional. I was sending you texts earlier this week because I've been starting to go to the comedy festival this week and some of the shows, and I'm seeing our posters everywhere. Aww. I used to be, like, such a comedy festival mad dog. Like, I would always go out, go to heaps of shows, go to the late shows. I still go every year, but I used to be obsessed. So to be, I feel like an imposter, I'll say that, but to be have our posters there and to be performing in the main room of the Melbourne Town Hall, like, that is ground zero for the comedy festival. It's going to be a huge show.
I got my hairs on my arms just went up when you said that. It really is. It's freaking wild.
So to celebrate that... invite you every single Bang On Live. We invite you to partake in a little chat about something that's going on in the world of culture. And you've pointed me in the direction of Irish Wish, Miff, which is a brand new comedy romance, better known as a rom-com, on Netflix. A nice hour and 33 minutes, which is
quick
good.
Quick one.
The reviews aren't great for this Lindsay Lohan vehicle, are they?
No. I mean, some of them I'm looking at right now, Irish Wish movie review, the worst movie of all time. Watching Irish Wish is a fate worse than death. I watched Irish Wish on Netflix. These are just the top line ones, so you don't have to. It's going to be a lot and we'll enjoy it immensely, no doubt.
So if you want to hate watch that with us, get your head around that over the next week. It's on Netflix. I'll put a link in the show notes. And, yeah, we're going to be digging into that at our Canberra Bang on Friday night next week and then in Melbourne as well on Saturday night. This weekend we're heading to Bendigo, our first ever show in central Victoria, one night only. We've never done it before. I don't know if we'll ever go back. So if you're anywhere in Bendigo or the surrounding amazing towns in central Victoria.
Central Vic, any of my old friends from Donald, where are you? It's not that far.
Come along, bring your mates.
It's an hour or so, but anyway.
It's going to be really, really fun. We're going to have a secret special guest, and we are finally going to be digging into the 14-episode series One Day. Also,
I feel like we set
Netflix.
Ourselves a large task with this one, One Day. It's a lot of viewing.
I'm up to episode 8 or 9, so I'm almost
okay.
There. And oh, I have a lot of thoughts.
Oh,
I have a lot of thoughts.
Oh, me too.
So we'll get into that in Bendigo
on
Saturday night.
Get ready with us. One lucky person and their guest, whoever they take with them, gets to come backstage with us in Bendigo and hang out and get photos before everybody else. So you don't have to hang around after the show to get us to sign merch and whatnot. You get to get ready with us, help me with my new hairdo, and perhaps have a sip of or even a cheeky glass of Pinot Grigio from our rider. We've only got one bottle, so you don't get much.
That's literally the only thing on our rider. Bottle of Pinot Grigio.
There'll be some lollies from the vending machine. Come on. You can have a couple of snakes with us.
One-on-one, get ready with us, Bendigo, special little treat. So if
it's
going
to be a hoot.
Want to head along, bring your mates and, you can get the tickets and everything in the show notes. What are you banging on about this week, Miff?
Oh, I've started watching something and I'm actually really, really enjoying it. It's a brand new Netflix series and it is created by those who are behind Game of Thrones.
Ooh.
Or were behind Game of Thrones, the two showrunners behind that. And it's called Three Body Problem.
Oh, my God, I've heard about this. Everyone's talking about this.
Oh, it's wild. And I'm only a couple of episodes in, but I'm loving it because I love a sci-fi movie. I love a sci-fi story, a bit of a dystopian future perspective, all that kind of stuff. But this one is, as far as I can, I still have no idea what the hell is going on, to be honest, at this point. But all that I do know is that it's incredibly lush in the way that the Game of Thrones folk are renowned for. They've created whole other worlds through an augmented reality game. But it also dips into the past, it dips into the present. It's just this huge, expansive universe that they're creating again, as they did with Game of Thrones, but it's also set in contemporary times too.
Mm.
So it's got all those boxes ticked, and it's based on a Chinese novel, Liu Shixin's novel, and starts out with the story of an astrophysicist it's a horrible beginning, don't let it put you off, who sees her father beaten to death during a struggle session in the Chinese Cultural Revolution. He obviously went against what was considered or deemed to be acceptable research. And it's an awful beginning for her and an ending for him. And then she's conscripted into the military because she's got that scientific background and obviously a great mind. And then something happens at this science base. There's contact or something with an alien planet, and the repercussions of that then become the story. So you then see students who are working on new projects starting to experience this. Well, it's far too complex for me to even explain at this point, but it's really good. I'm sucked in. I'm totally sucked in.
I can tell.
I can't wait to watch more. I just think it's just nice to watch something that's not, I don't know, I've been feeling like I want something from television lately because I haven't been able to really finish anything. And I do think I want a bit more imagination and I want more fantasy, perhaps.
Escapism,
total escapism. And you know, bit cheesy. Game of Thrones was always a bit cheesy too. I like that as well.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot of escapism and I think it's going to be an interesting series. So I'm in.
Have you continued to watch Palm Royale?
I haven't, but I've heard that it gets better and better, so I need to go back to that. But again, I'm a bit...
Hasn't pulled you in.
Hasn't, didn't
much
pull
like the
me
new
in
look,
initially.
I was like, oh.
Yeah,
there's been
I
a few, if you, I mean, I don't want to, I know how hard it is to make TV and how long it takes, so I never want to just dismiss things, but there has been a few after this kind of age of prestige television, and maybe we're seeing the first effects of, you know, that kind of drought of the writer's strike and stuff coming through.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, the interesting thing is... you know, Game of Thrones was always appointment television, wasn't it? People would watch it when it came out, whereas I think the launch of this wasn't as spectacular as they expected. So perhaps that speaks to culturally that even appointment television is over.
Well, yeah, it's changing. People's attention is way more spread, and it's harder and harder to get audiences. Even that show, we haven't talked about it, but that I've been so looking forward to it, the new Stephen Frears show on HBO, The Regime, which is on Binge, featuring the amazing Kate Winslet as this kind of dictator in this imaginary but somewhere in sort of Western Europe place. And it's so highly stylized. But again, I sort of watched the first episode and then I just forgot about it. I haven't come back to it. Same sort of thing. Like, think about the names involved there. Kate Winslet, Stephen Frears, but it's still not quite hitting those marks.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't want to throw it all away. It's just, yeah, it's curious. Curious time in prestige television.
We're very lucky. It's an amazing time in prestige television. It's just, I think we're a bit spoilt for choice now.
And that's why we're choosing to watch Lindsay Lohan's Irish Wish.
Correct. That is true. That is true. We want to feel something.
I mean, we watch good shit as well.
We do. We do.
Fun to watch silly stuff as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, what are you banging on about?
Oh, well, speaking of fun to watch silly stuff, I wanted to bang on about the comedy festival because we're kind of in the thick of a run of different comedy festivals. There was Perth Fringe, Adelaide Fringe, and now the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, which is one of the biggest in the world. And, of course, Sydney and Brisbane are going to be continuing on. And I just started going because it all kicked off over the Easter long weekend. I saw Tom Gleeson, Bang Fam, on Thursday night last week. And then this week I've gone to see Zoe Coombs-Marr's new show. And last night I went and saw Geraldine Hickey's show. And I just am like, first of all, time-wise, love a good solid hour. In, out, home for dinner. Love that.
Right.
And all the people I love are doing early shows. Love that. Oh,
that says something about our age, I think. We love to be at home with a rug on our lap and our cat purring by about 9 at the latest.
Yeah, and I love jokes. Obviously, we all love to laugh, but particularly I'm loving those three acts and I think some of the other acts I'm going to be seeing. Just great storytelling, and it's just such a joy to be back in those rooms again. I think sometimes when you haven't done it for a while and maybe post-pandemic you haven't gone back to comedy festivals or whatever, there's just nothing like being in the energy of a room and everyone's having a laugh. And there's that glorious timing of people who are at the top of their game, as all of those comedians are, and just that wonderful, you know, nailing it of everyone experiencing this together. And also in some cases, you know, getting a bit uncomfortable with what's said and then thinking about that, all that sort of stuff. So the comedy festival in Melbourne's case is going to be running for the next 3 weeks. There's heaps more that I'm going to go and see, but I just wanted to give you a little shout out at the start of it. And also, of course, for the many acts that are coming to Sydney and Brisbane. And as you know, in Perth and Adelaide, it's just an absolute blast. So just want to remind people of that communion, much like live music, nothing beats it being in the room. And I've been having a good old laugh at all of it. It's been wonderful.
Good. I feel like I'm not laughing enough except at bang on shows, which are an absolute hoot. So I'm not laughing anymore. But when we do bang on, we're laughing like drains. It's so much fun.
It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous show. So we will see you this Saturday night, Bendigo.
Bendigo, come on out. We want to see you.
Very excited. I'll see you in a couple of days and we'll get someone to do your hair, basically. That's what you're asking, isn't it?
Yeah. I've got some hot tongs. Is that what they call them these days? You can help me out.
Oh, my God, Miff, I almost forgot. We got a great message in the bang box.
Oh, yes.
A late breaker. Look, a couple of weeks ago you banged on about Pig City, which is a brilliant capture of the Brisbane music scene during the Joe Bjelke-Peterson era and beyond, and what that, you know, what politics did to the scene and everything that's followed since.
Yeah, and there's a 20th anniversary edition coming out very, very soon.
And so someone off the back of that bang on ordered a copy of it, which I love. And when it arrived, they got a little bit of a surprise. And even better, they emailed us this week in the bang box and sent a video of what took place when they opened the mail.
This is what happens when you don't read the Amazon listing properly. I ordered this super cool book, 10th anniversary edition of Pig City, which is about rock music in Brisbane. But what I didn't realise is that actually I have ordered the large print version. I suppose that's what happens when you're a geriatric millennial.
34 years old, hitting the large print books.
And it was huge.
It was so
actually
big.
Huge.
She said, and it's not quite correct, it's a bit of an exaggeration. She's like, there's 12 words to a page. It feels like you're flying through it.
Emma, we love you. But also, she highly recommended by the end. She's like, why have I not been reading books like this since the beginning of time.
I always make fun of mates who have changed their iPhone text or their phone, whatever phone they're using, to larger. And now it's like, it's a joy because I'm fully going blind. I'm one of, you know, like many people in their 40s suddenly needing to wear glasses at every point. Why is everyone printing all the text small again? It's not them, it's me, all that sort of stuff. Yep, but the large print books, I am a step away from those, Miff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And look, it's perfectly normal. Problem is everyone can read your messages when you're on the plane. It's like, oh, no, I don't need to know that.
Thank you, Emma. Thank you to everyone who sends us messages. Even if I don't get back to you, we do always read them. I always forward them to Miff, and we love you so much, Bank fan. We'll see you on stage, and I'll see you next week here in the pod.
See you in Bendigo.
See you, babes.
Bye.
Hang on.
Hey there, Bang Fam. I'm Beverly Wang, host of the podcast Stop Everything, the show that makes you smarter about pop culture. And I do it with a cast of brilliant and hilarious guest critics every week. They jump on board with me to review, debrief, and just, you know, like have big thoughts and feelings about whatever is going on in our pop culture feeds. And then at the end of our chat, I roll out my little Stop Everything soapbox. They jump on board and they get to have a little moment to have a rant. Just get something off their chest, whatever is on their minds, whether it's good or bad or frustrating. Here's RuPaul's Drag Race icon, Michelle Visage.
When I grew up, I had to make mistakes to learn from what I did. Now listen, some mistakes are bigger than others. Some people are not equipped to make certain decisions at the time of said offense. And I think it's really disheartening that we as a society need to just shut these people down.
And here's broadcaster, journalist, and walking pop culture evangelist Talia Olatia going off.
You will have people who say, I don't listen to her music, but they're not just dismissing Taylor Swift. They dismiss the fans who do nothing but unapologetically like the person that they like.
Don't yuck other people's yum.
Exactly that.
Oh, better out than in, I say. Doesn't it just feel good to get that out? Stop Everything. It's the show that makes you smarter about pop culture. Please join us. You can find it on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.